Hi, friends, and welcome back to Professor Pastor Paul's Midweek Bible Festival. Thanks go out to Shelley for providing a lovely Bible study last week. I'm happy to be back with you. This week, we're looking at the gospel reading from the lectionary. It comes from Matthew 13, and it's a parable that Jesus tells. You know, Jesus was full of parables, all these supremely concrete, simple images he used to convey deep and abiding and sometimes troubling truths, as we find tonight. Tonight, our themes that seem to come up again and again are secrets, one theme. Another is division. And the third theme is revelation. Hear now the parable of the weeds from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 13, verses 24 to 30 and 36 to 43. The parable of the weeds. He put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field. But while everybody was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat, and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And the slaves of the householder came and said to him, "Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where then did these weeds come from?" He answered, "An enemy has done this." The slave said to him, "Well, then do you want us to go and gather the weeds?" But he replied, "No, for in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let both of them grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, 'Collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Then he left the crowds and went into the house, and the disciples approached him, saying, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field." He answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Let anyone with ears listen." The word of the Lord. That's our parable for the evening. Context. I like to do context. I'm a big context person. This comes in the near the middle of Jesus' third discourse. There are five large discourses in the Gospel of Matthew. This particular one is the third one, and it is full of parables about the kingdom of heaven. Mark 4 has similar parables, but not the ones we focus on today. This parable of the weeds is unique to Matthew. It's not found in any other gospel. And also, notably, the parables in Mark and Luke refer to the kingdom of God, whereas in Matthew, that same kingdom is referred to as the kingdom of heaven. A couple more comments and a question before we get back into the text. A couple more comments and a question. Comment. These five discourses that show up in Matthew sometimes are considered to echo, they kind of serve as echoes to the five books of Torah. Because in Matthew, Jesus is depicted as a kind of new Moses offering a new Torah that both fulfills and supersedes the old. Therefore, these five discourses, these five long segments of Jesus' teaching are thought to be on, put there on purpose to echo the five books of the Torah. And they all end with a formula. When Jesus had finished saying these things, dot, 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 all five discourses end with that formula. Now, this discourse, this is very interesting, and this gets to the secret business, the themes of secrets and division in Revelation. This discourse that we find that this particular parable comes as part of, what we read today is just a central part of the third discourse. There's more before it, and there's more after it. This discourse establishes the disciples as special hearers of the words of Jesus. They have an inside track. They have ears to hear. Okay. They are insiders who get it while the others remain unsure and are perhaps confused. That is, the crowd is unsure and perhaps confused, but the insiders get it. This image of division, we have the inside group, the disciples, the outside group, the crowds. This image of division is important to us here and stands in contrast to Mark's treatment of the disciples, who are, if anything, as clueless or perhaps even more clueless than the average member of the crowd. So there's the separation here between those who know and those who don't. The disciples know, the crowds do not. But notice, let me make one more comment about that. Within this discourse, Jesus speaks these words to those disciples. He says, to you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, to his disciples, the in-group. The secrets, the kingdom of heaven has secrets, and the insiders know it, outsiders don't, and there's a division between them. To you it has been given to know the secrets of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. That's the division. For to those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. The reason I speak to them in parables is that seeing they do not perceive, and hearing they do not listen, nor do they understand. With them indeed is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah that says, you will indeed listen, but never understand. You will indeed look, but never perceive. So there's this very clear division between the in-group and the out-group. But notice, this is interesting, pardon me. Notice, the disciples get it only because they ask Jesus to explain it. The in-group gets it, not because they just get it, but because they ask Jesus to explain it. And then Jesus explains it, you know, the weeds are this, right? The field is this, right? The sower is this. It's really just lines it up very plainly for them. They ask. This is also true for the parable of the sower, which comes earlier in the same chapter within the same third discourse. So there's a secret, undisclosed nature to the kingdom of heaven. There's a secret, undisclosed nature. And Jesus seems to want to keep it hidden. Why? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But Jesus seems to want to keep it hidden. Earlier in chapter 13, the disciples ask Jesus why he speaks in parables and why he's so cryptic. And Jesus cuts a clean line between the disciples and the crowd with that verse I read earlier. To some have been given ears to hear, and to some have not been given the ears to hear. So there's a clean distinction, okay? And Jesus speaks in parables. When they ask him why he speaks in parables, he says, that's because some people don't get it, and you do. But it seems that, again, the disciples only hear and see because Jesus lays bare the truth of the parables. He tells them what it means, as I said. The seeds are this, the sower is this, right? The field is this, the reapers are this. They only see and hear because Jesus lays bare the truth of the parables in direct, discursive terms, laying it out for them in plain and reasonable and non-intuitive language. He makes it plain, and this happens because they ask. We might pause and ask ourselves how fair this is of Jesus. I would not recommend this teaching style at all. In my line of work here at the college, it wouldn't work so well. Can you imagine taking the strong students aside after a particularly opaque lecture, them asking me what it means, and me laying it out for them in plain, simple terms, and then saying, those weak students out there, the others who have no ears to hear or eyes to see, but you strong students, you get it. I don't know why it happens. Maybe Peter Ray knows. Do you know Peter Ray? Maybe you could help us with this. I wish you were in the room. I would call on you and see if you had an answer. In any case, Jesus talks about the kingdom of heaven as if it is a secret. Why would it be a secret? Why would he not want to just put it out there? I'm not sure what Jesus' purpose is in that here, but let's go ahead and look at the text a little more closely. First, back in 13:1, we see that Jesus has attracted such great crowds that he needs to put himself out in a boat to avoid being overrun. So there's a lot of people. That's back in the beginning of the discourse. Jesus puts himself in a boat, puts it out from shore, and teaches the people who are on the beach. So he's not overrun. And he begins by saying, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field. Later in verse 37, Jesus reveals that sower to be the Son of Man, which of course for centuries has been taken by Christian scholars and lay people to mean Jesus himself. It's self-referential, the Son of Man. Just as the title Son of God emphasizes Jesus' divine nature, so the title Son of Man emphasizes his human nature. So Jesus himself is the sower, the field is the world, and according to verse 38, the good seeds are the children of the kingdom. So Jesus describes his work, seems to be describing his work here, as forming children of the kingdom. That's what he is to do. That's his job. I'm here to sow the seed, to scatter the seed, and to bring forth children of the kingdom. But, of course, while everyone's asleep, an enemy comes and sows weeds among the wheat and then goes away. And verse 38 indicates that these weeds are the children of the evil one. The weeds mixed in with the wheat, sown by the enemy. The enemy, of course, is the devil. So the devil sows weeds among the good wheat. So the wheat is the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the devil has sown the weeds in an attempt to destroy, one presumes, the kingdom. Now, these weeds and this wheat are impossible to separate. You cannot pull up the weeds without also uprooting the wheat. When you dig down deep, the roots are so intermingled that you cannot distinguish one from the other at their roots. Therefore, they must both be allowed to grow and exist together. The sower says, for in gathering the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. So let them both grow together. Let them both grow together. Until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn. The meaning of this is explained in verses 41 to 43. When Jesus says, the Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers, and they will throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Interesting little side note here. Apparently, the Son of Man has his own kingdom. Separate from the kingdom of heaven, in which both the wheat and weeds flourish, right? It says, the Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers. So, apparently the Son of Man has his own kingdom, separate from the kingdom of heaven, in which both weeds and wheat flourish. Daniel's apocalypse also refers to the Son of Man arriving to rule his kingdom. But speaking of apocalypse, here we find Jesus in full apocalyptic mode. Now, the popular meaning of the word apocalypse means, you know, major disaster, earthquakes, maybe, you know, apocalypse now, you know, a war, sort of the end of days. And of course, there's a connection there, especially with the book of Revelation. But the roots of apocalypse indicate that the word means unveiling, revelation, exposing what is true. It's an exposing, it's an unveiling of the truth. And in the end, says Jesus, all will be revealed at the end of the age. We will see face to face and not through a glass darkly, as the Apostle Paul says. So there's a clear division drawn between the evildoers on one hand and the righteous on the other. But right now, those two cannot be separated. Right now, those two cannot be separated. We can't see all things. We cannot know all hearts. But one day we will. Parenthetically, these days we don't really emphasize the way Jesus divides us, right? I certainly don't think that way normally. I don't think about Jesus. When I first think of Jesus, I don't think of Jesus as being a divider. But Jesus is a divider. Jesus does divide us. His very own story, in fact, shows us that when the truth comes and stands among us, division arises. Think about John the Baptist and the religious and political powers of the day, and how Jesus affected them, how Jesus affected Pilate, how Jesus affected the scribes and Pharisees, how Jesus affected John the Baptist. The truth divides, friends. The truth divides, not because it seeks division, but because some have ears to hear and some do not. Jesus' words here remind me of this from earlier in Matthew, back in chapter 10, a few chapters earlier. Do not think that I have come to bring peace on the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And one's foes will be members of one's own household. Strong words. Jesus. Stepping back now here as we conclude and looking at this passage, there seems to me to be at least two ways to read it. I'm sure there are more, but at least two. The simplest, most straightforward way is this. The righteous will enter the kingdom of God, that is, the righteous people will enter the kingdom of God, and evildoers will not. But we do not know now who is who. We do not know. We can't separate them. So we need to trust God, work for the betterment of the world, love one another, and move forward. This simpler interpretation reminds me of Harry Potter. There's two characters in book four. Professor Snape, who is, of course, all the way through the whole series. And book four features particularly a fellow named Mad-Eye Moody. And Snape seems bad, but he's really good. Mad-Eye Moody, in book four at least, seems good, but he's actually bad. So it's hard to distinguish until the end of the book, or the end of the series, as the case may be, who's good and who's bad. It is not possible to know who is good and who is bad until it's over. Appearances can be deceiving, but in the end, we will know. In this simpler reading, the division comes between individual people. But there's another way to read this text. In the Gulag Archipelago, Alexander Solzhenitsyn's protagonist, this is a very famous book written by Russian writer Alexander Solzhenitsyn, not easy to say, his protagonist suggests that our world is more complicated even than the world of Harry Potter. He says this, "If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them." I'll say it again. If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. but that is not how it is. He goes on to say, the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart? The line dividing good and evil, the vision, this line between good and evil, cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart? Perhaps on this side of the curtain, we must live not only with the evil that we see outside of us, but we must also contend with the evil that lies within us. And perhaps the apocalypse, when it comes, will involve the burning away of the evil in each of our hearts.